Exciting privilege to be here with you today. Appreciate your interest in small group ministry. Whenever we talk about small groups, it's very obvious we're talking about relationships. We're talking about getting close to people. We're talking about growing in the Lord. And there's some really interesting studies out recently about the importance of relationships, even just for your health. There's one study that studied the difference in people with bad health habits and good health habits. And then they threw in another factor, and that was their relationship connection. And so they compared people with good health habits. They didn't drink, they didn't smoke, they didn't overeat, they weren't obese. And yet they were relationally connected with people with bad health habits. They did all those things and did not have relationships. And the shocking result of that study was the people with bad health habits and good relationships were actually more healthy than the people with good health habits and no relationships. And so I'm here to tell you today, it'd be better to leave here and go eat Krispy Kreme donuts with a group of friends than to eat broccoli by yourself, all right? Another study looked into that, and they studied how people responded to the common cold. And again, they studied relationally connected people against unrelationally connected people. And they found out people who did not have good friendships were more susceptible to catch the common cold. Once they caught it, they kept it longer. And in fact, they even studied that they produced more mucus than people who had friends. Which goes to say, we've already believed that unfriendly people are snottier than friendly people. So we're here to talk about relationships. Everybody have your little sheet, okay? If you don't raise your hand, we'll get one to you. Want you to follow along? Why are small groups so important? Why small groups? Let me give you two words to put in those first two squares or rectangles. They are biblical. I hope you'll take notes. What excites me about small group ministry is that I think this is as restoration as you get. We're a movement that says we want to be like the church in the Bible. Well, what would you do if you were in Acts chapter 2 and you had 3,000 Christians overnight? I'm telling you what you'd do. You'd do exactly what they did. You'd have some place you could all meet together, and then you'd divide everybody up into homes and you'd take care of each other. And we see all these scriptures here about the church that met in the temple courts and it met house to house. We read all those wonderful one another passages in the New Testament. Now, my friends, the only way those can be obeyed is in the context of relationships. The church got in a lot of trouble when we moved out of that intimate setting in a home to a cathedral that was honestly modeled after the Roman Forum. We moved away from meeting a circle of people in a living room and sharing our lives to a cathedral when everybody sits in rows and looks at the back of each other's neck. Something was lost there. What excites me about small group ministry is that we are restoring that biblical model. But on the other side here, not only are they biblical, your next word is they are effective. What a great combination. Well, we can discover something that's not just biblical, but it's effective in the day that we live. George Gallup has been studying American people for many years. His latest polls say that American people are the most lonely people on the globe. That despite our affluence and despite all the extra time we have because of time-saving conveniences, we still do not have many relationships. Many of you can watch that. Just look at what's happened the last few generations as America moved from the family farm, where you lived on that farm with uncles and aunts and grandparents and parents and kids, and everybody was a community helping to raise those children. There was instant relationships. You were almost self-contained. And then some of us grew up in the era that I call the Great Neighborhood Era, where you lived in neighborhoods where you knew each other. The neighborhood I grew up in, every birthday was celebrated with the neighborhood, every Christmas. My folks, still six best friends, have all moved out of that neighborhood in Montgomery, but they're all still best friends. And that was an awesome time. But as America moved to the suburbs, we did something unusual. We moved the homes from the front of the lots with big front porches and sidewalks and neighborhood drugstores and neighborhood grocery stores and the post office where you all met and connected every day. We moved the houses to the back of the lot. We put a fake front porch on the front. And we didn't get to know our neighbors. We don't all gather at a drugstore. We all know each other. We all go to Super Walmart. We don't even have to interact with our neighbors. We've got our instant automatic garage door opener. We open our garage, we go in, we've got everything we need. And it all sounds awesome. But what it did to Americans is it left them lonely. Listen to me. The number one felt need in America today, I'm not saying the number one need, the number one felt need is for community. People want a place to connect with people because it's not happening. I'll never forget a couple when I lived in Pensacola. They came to church and I started to get to know them. And the guy was just unbelievable personality, beautiful wife. On the side, he was a magician. I mean, everywhere he'd go, just people just flocked around him. And so one day I said, "Johnny, what brought you guys back to church?" He said, "Buddy," he said, "we moved to Pensacola about 2 years ago." He said, "The other night, Adrian and I are laying in bed. We can't get to sleep. And just in the middle of the night, I just sort of asked her, Adrian, if we really had a problem tonight, who could we call at midnight?" And she said, "I couldn't find any. I don't know anybody. We need to come back to church." My friends, we can sit here and we can bemoan what's happened in America, or we can say today, this may be the greatest opportunity the church has had in decades. Because if we can be that place where people can build meaningful, lasting friendships, where people can connect, then we can be the place to reach people. And under that side of relationships, let me just talk about some of the things that make small group ministry so effective. First of all, it's the place people build relationships. You know the old statistic that's been floating around a long time. I think it's true. If someone new comes to your church, and within the first 6 months they're there, if they make zero friends, listen to me, 100% of those people will leave your church. If within the first 6 months they make simply six friendships, 100% of those people will stay in your church. What's that say? We need a place for relationships. We also need a place for spiritual growth. Now, friends, if I had any evaluation of our spiritual growth, it's that we have information overload in our churches. Our people know a lot of facts, but we've not been really good at applying those facts. We need a place where people can grow spiritually. Listen to me. People grow the most in the context of relationships. They grow the most when there is some sense of accountability. What are you going to do about this message? Well, here's what I'll do. Let's get back next week and let's talk about it. Well, the next point there is the idea of shepherding. My friends, most of our churches, we struggle to keep up with our people. I don't know about your church, but we can produce a computer printout every Monday morning that will tell us who is at church and who wasn't at church. We can tell you how many weeks you missed. If you've met 3, 10, or we got some folks that missed 45. And periodically, we try to work that list. But it's not very effective. What happens? Well, let me call you. You know, you've been on our computer list for 45 weeks now. We've really missed you at church. And, oh, that doesn't work, guys. But if you're in my living room every Sunday night and you miss it, that works. We've been a part of a really awesome, exciting movement in our church. About 6.5 years ago, we were a church of about 300 people. Last Sunday, we hit 1,300 for the first Sunday. And I'm going to tell you, we're not the best organized church, but we do small groups well. And the reason we've been able to sustain that growth, and we only have 6 shepherds, we're a young church. The reason we better sustain that and keep care of those people is we tell them, our elders will say, you come to Landmark, they'll sit down and tell you, if you want us to do a good job taking care of you, you've got to get in a life group. Because if you don't, we probably won't do a very good job. You see, folks, we need a way to shepherd people that's relational and natural. And then how about the idea of ministry? All of our churches struggle to plug people into ministry. I think that's an awesome idea. Because the more involved people are, the more faithful they will be. We all know that. But the larger a church gets, you just have to start dreaming up all these different kinds of ministries. You know, you got the parking lot ministry, and you got the trash can ministry, and you got, I mean, it's all ministries, you know, we got to call it that. But what I love about a small group is if you get our people in a living room together, loving on each other and getting to know each other, people simply begin to use their spiritual gift naturally. One person's good at inviting somebody and they're going to be the evangelist. And another brother over here knows how to study the Bible with people and they can sit down to that Bible study. And another sister over here, she's good at hospitality and she opens her home up for the small group. And another sister, she may not say a peep through the group, but she loves to write notes and she writes those notes of encouragement. I'll never forget one night walking into a small group. I'm walking across the lawn and there's a guy named Bill Hatter at the door. He said, "Buddy, I need to talk to you." We go over the side of the lawn and he said, "You know, I'm taking some money up tonight." I said, "Why are we taking money up?" He said, "Well, Sandy Clark's car keeps breaking down." Sandy Clark was one of our newest Christians. She had a teenage daughter. She was a single mom. Sandy didn't have much money, and she struggled just to make it in life. She had bought this used car, and it broke down. Some days she couldn't get her kid to school. Some days she couldn't get to work. Well, Bill had heard about that. By the end of the night, he'd taken up $400. By the end of the night, he hands that money to a retired military guy in our group named Paul Schrader. The next Monday morning, Paul Schrader goes to downtown. He walks into the office building that Sandy works in. He says, "Sandy, hand me your keys." She says, "What are you doing?" He says, "The group has decided we're going to get your car fixed." She hands him the keys while she's at work. He gets the car fixed, takes it back by the end of the day. Now, why did that happen in that church? Did we have a car fixing ministry? Oh, no. They're just folks who loved each other and knew this lady needed it. I've been in small groups where we bought cars for single moms. I've been in groups where the small group people were the pallbearers at funerals. In our church, I can't tell you over the last year, the amount of people who've been married. Maybe they were living together when they came to our church and they went to a small group and they're convinced to get married. It was time for them to get married. The small group throws the reception because these folks didn't have enough money. Or I saw a small group the other day pay for a honeymoon because they didn't have the money. And guys, why does that happen? We don't have a honeymoon ministry. My wife and I would be interested if they did. We just got people in homes taking care of each other. And my friends, that's how it happens. And that brings you to the next point under being effective. It's a great place for evangelism. Not because we bring someone in this small group and we try to convince them about Jesus and how to become a Christian. It's more basic than that. Jesus said, "By this shall all men know that you're my disciples, that you love each other as I have loved you." And so someone gets in that group, and for the first time in their life, they see real love. They see real Christians with real problems and a real God who helps them with those problems and real friends who support them. They hear people openly confess their sins and their struggles and their hurts. And they watch God work. You've been to one of our small groups last Sunday night. The major application question was, name something in your life, a bad time, a hurt in your life, even a failure in your life that God has now used for something good. Can you imagine if you're that non-Christian, you're sitting in that circle, and you hear a Christian say, "You know, years ago I made this mistake. Years ago I had this failure. But now, thank God, He's molded me. He's equipped me for ministry." There's a guy in our church, his name's David Evans. He's just absolutely a redneck. Can you imagine a redneck in Montgomery, Alabama? Hard to imagine, isn't it? Well, David, man, he is a redneck. David's a big Dale Earnhardt fan. One day he sits down for supper on Wednesday night and happened to be a guy across the table from him who told him that he was a, what's the guy's name? A Jeff Gordon fan. I kid you not, David stands up at his plate, end of conversation, and walks to another table. I mean, David's just an absolute redneck. I mean, you never know what David's going to say. He talks out in every class. I kid you not. The night I introduced the book of Romans, me and this other guy are teaching the book of Romans. We got a class full of people. Some of our more scholarly people are involved in this class. I get up, I say, "Does anyone know the theme of the book of Romans?" Now, David is always going to speak. He raises his hand. "Okay, David, here's exactly what he said. You know, buddy, I've never read Romans. I really don't know anything about it. But I imagine the theme is this." I'm like, "David, would you shut up, man? You never read Romans. Why are you talking?" That's just David. Let me tell you what happened with David. When David first came to us, he had been so terrible with his children, with his wife. She divorced him. Finally, Deborah starts coming back to church. We start working with them. They move back in together. The small group has to meet with David and say, "David, you guys can't be living together, man. We know you're a new Christian, but this is just not going to work. Either you guys need to get married or you need to move out. Do we need to help you?" Well, finally, they're convinced to get married. It's Sunday afternoon. The small group is throwing the wedding in our church building. I'm performing the ceremony. Me and David and Deborah are on stage going through it. I kid you not, his cell phone rang 3 times. And he went to the edge of the stage and had conversations. But let me tell you about David Evans. Man, he's had a small group. They've loved him. His small group leader's name is a guy named Jimmy Dickens. Man, he is on fire for God. He calls David every other day. A couple months ago, I preached a sermon on racism. really pretty hard sermon. At the end of the sermon, I said, you know, I'd like some brother in here who really feels convicted about this. Maybe in your past, you were even a racist. I'd like someone just to volunteer right now to come forward and lead a prayer. There's 1,200 people that day. Guess who comes up? It's David Evans. And that rascal led a prayer that God blessed. My friends, I've seen it. I could tell you 1,000 stories of people who are influenced and led to Christ, not because we zeroed in and said, you got to become a Christian, but because they watch Christians love each other in these small groups. Well, I hope I've convinced you. You probably wouldn't be here if you didn't think small groups were a good idea. Here's what I want to get to, the next part of our outline. Well, if small groups are such a great idea, why do so many churches fail at small groups? I see churches all the time. We tried small groups 5 years ago. It just didn't work. We just can't get people to go to small groups. Our folks won't leave the church on Sunday night. Why do so many churches fail at what ought to be such an awesome ministry? Please write these down. Number one, churches fail at small group ministry because of a divided leadership. I'm convinced if you want to do small group ministry well, the first thing you need to do is convince the elders and the staff of that church that this is big time important. If they're not all united, you're probably going to have problems. And so that's where you start. You don't just throw out 2 or 3 groups and say, hope they make it. You make sure the leadership is involved in this and they're united. I remember one church I went to work for, and they had sort of tinkered with small groups, but only a small percentage of the church was involved in it. The first thing I noticed was there was not a single elder or staff member, it's a pretty large church, that led a small group. The first thing we did was shut down the small group ministry for 3 months, rename it, and reintroduce it. And our first year, at every church I've been with, every elder and every staff person leads a small group the first year. Because that says this is important. The leadership must be united. Number two, inadequate commitment. If you're going to do small group ministry, you need to make a big commitment to it. When you come to Landmark, we had our membership 101 class last Sunday. Our elders come before them. One of our elders said, we want you guys to know we are a small group church. That's how we do church. Listen closely to this, friends. There is a difference between a church that does small groups and a small group church. I believe at Landmark, our life group ministry is our number one ministry. Now, we got a boo-koodles of ministries, but our number one top ministry, if something's not going to suffer in our group, our church, it's going to be our life groups. We've made a commitment that that's the kind of church we're going to be. Now, sometimes I see elders, quite frankly, who decide to begin small groups because they just want to get some people off their back. There's an element in the church that keeps saying, we want some small groups, please, please. And finally, the elders say, okay, we'll let a couple of you guys go out and have these groups. In the long run, I really don't think that's going to work. Another compromise that many churches try that I don't really believe in, if I can be frank with you this morning, is me, we want to do small groups, but we don't want to upset people too much, so let's compromise. Let's do small groups once a month. Anybody ever seen that one? It sounds really good because I think the idea is we'll do it once a month and people will like it so much, eventually we'll start doing it pretty consistently every week. But the problem with that is once a month, you do not ever experience small group dynamics. You don't build relationships once a month. It's a good fellowship area and a good social club. And in most churches, they're way too large. But you don't really experience small group dynamics. And so when someone finally says, well, we'd like to move these groups to every week, then the church says, well, these are okay, but we really don't want to do it every week. I think that's a bad compromise. You need to decide to commit yourself to this. Number three, and this may be the biggest thing, inadequate training. Inadequate leadership training. A lot of churches get excited about small group ministry and say, well, we're going to start this small group ministry. And they, you know, grab a couple folks they know who want it and throw a couple groups out there. But most churches don't train their leaders. My friends, there is a method to this ministry. And there's something to principles of small group dynamics and leadership that your leaders need to understand. We have a requirement at Landmark that no one becomes a small group leader unless they've been through our 8-week leader training course. You cannot lead a group. Why? Because I've seen so many groups fail. For instance, a church decides we're going to do small groups. Who wants to lead? And Joe Bubba, you know, who's the best Sunday school teacher in the church, says, I want to lead. And everybody goes, awesome. Joe Bubba's a great Sunday school teacher, man. He'll be a great small group leader. And it's an absolute disaster. Why? Because Joe Bubba's a good Sunday school teacher. He likes to what? He likes to lecture, man. He likes to talk. And now he's got an audience every Sunday night, too. And no sharing, no openness, because Joe Bubba is not ready to lead a small group. You need to have good training. You need a way. And here's what I love. There's a lot of brothers in your church that would never teach a Sunday school class, but would be a great small group leader because they know how to ask questions. They know how to listen. They know how to carry. I think of a guy I led with a couple years ago, one of our younger Christians, a guy named Joe Martin. Joe's an awesome guy. We never can even get Joe in front of the church. But he's one of our best small group leaders. He just loves people. So you need adequate training. Number four, I think many churches fail because of loose structure. They begin small groups, but everybody's just sort of out there on their own. There's no accountability among the small group leaders. Now, listen to me. You can start small groups that way, and I would guess from 3 to 6 months you'll be successful because everybody's excited enough to get it started. But after a while it bogs down because some of these churches, they have no start date, they have no end date. They have no organization date. You know, you're just there forever. The small group leaders are provided no curriculum. And so the first 3 months, everybody says, let's study this. And then you get through that, and they spend a month trying to decide what they're going to study next. And then they finally, someone says, let's study Revelation. Someone's dumb enough to say, we'll do it. And then they bog down in Revelation, the group dies. My friends, there's got to be a structure of accountability, of organization to make the small groups work. Now, that brings me to the next point, number five, is loose curriculum. There ought to be a better way of putting that. I think one of the big mistakes I see our churches make is start small groups and there is no common curriculum. In other words, let's say your church starts 10 small groups. And you get all the guys together, say, we're going to start these groups. Everybody just go out and do what you want to do. Now, that sounds good. But in the long run, what I found is the leader doesn't have time to develop curriculum every week. Different groups study different things. There's no unity. In the long run, it bogs down. And just does not work. I think there's a strength, and we'll talk about this in a moment, of having a common curriculum that unites people and that helps your leaders. Now that brings me to number six, isn't it? Stagnant groups. In churches where you don't have an absolute start time and stop time to your groups, people tend to stay in the same groups forever. I went and did a workshop with the church a few months ago, a 1,500-member church. They were upset because they only had 300 members in groups. The first thing I noticed was those 300 who had been in group, they had been in the same groups for 10 years. Well, if you're new to that church and you happen to visit one of those groups and those guys have been together for 10 years, you think you can bust in that circle? You think you know the inside stories and inside jokes? It just doesn't work. We had to convince that church to close those down, reorganize, restart, and now they have a majority of their church involved. There's got to be some kind of curriculum and structure that unites people together and not having stagnant groups. And then one more thing is what I call weak promotion. I think many churches fail because they're not willing to make that commitment. And therefore, they're afraid of offending someone, so they start small groups and they start it sort of undercover. I mean, you can find out about it if you ask, but we don't want to get up and say too much. My friends, I want to encourage you. I believe if you'll follow the model I'm going to introduce you to today, I believe you can convince your members. If I could tell you, if I could take you back 10 years ago and show you the Landmark Church in Montgomery, I guarantee you there's not a church represented here that's more traditional than that church was. I mean, this absolutely was a church where having coffee in a Sunday school class was a controversy. And women were required to wear dresses. Now, 10 years later, we're a completely different church. But there had to be a moment where we took the time to teach and to promote. We spent 6 months talking about small groups, preaching about small groups, preparing the church. And when we started off whole hog. And if you come to our church today, every Sunday you're going to hear something about life groups. Every Sunday. And every Sunday you're going to be invited to go to one of those groups because that's our number one program. In fact, we're sort of a weird church. Last Sunday I looked, we had 100 more people in small groups than we did in Sunday school. Now that's pretty unusual. But you see, we're a small group church. That's what we do. That's what we promote. That's what we push. Here's what I've learned. You cannot push everything. If it's a church, you try to push Wednesday night, Sunday morning, every program just as hard. In the long run, everything's lost and nobody pays attention to anything. So as a church, what I convince you to do, you find a couple things you're really good at. Oh, you do those other things, but you big time push these. And we big time push small groups because we know. We got a bunch of new Christians. We got a bunch of new folks. If we can get them in a small group, they'll do good. If we don't get them in a life group, we'll be in trouble. So let me introduce you. Then turn to the back side of the page. Let me introduce you to what I think is an effective model for small group ministry. I've studied this for years, and I tried to look for a model that I thought would work in our churches. If you'd like to later, you can come by our booth, and I've got a lot of testimonies from different churches that have tried this model and it's worked. We started this about 6 years ago at Landmark. And since that time, we've had lots of churches come visit us and go, how do you do it? Teach us. And I'm happy to say these churches have taken this model, tweaked it for their situation, and actually done very well. And let me explain the model. Here's the purpose. We call these pulpit-based small groups. Listen to this. Groups meet to discuss the Sunday morning message and apply it to their lives and to build meaningful, nurturing relationships in Christ. In other words, the model that we have followed that I think works so well is that whatever I preach about on Sunday morning is what the groups will discuss and apply Sunday afternoon and Sunday night. Now notice what I did not say. I did not say they are to critique the message. That's not what we do. We apply the message. And so you come Sunday morning and you hear the message. Like last Sunday morning, what we preached about was how God takes the worst things in our life and equips us for our best ministry. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, Paul says, we've been comforted by God with His comfort so that we might go out and comfort others in their trouble. What's he saying? God has blessed us to use our past, even our failures, for His glory. As a preacher, man, I love preaching. But what I love about preaching our church more than anything else is I know whatever we talk about will be applied Sunday night. And so by the end of the discussion, like I mentioned to you earlier, everyone's going to share a story of some trouble they were in that they thought was awful that God has used for something good. And then the final thing they did in group is they talked about what is some trouble you're in right now, and if you're not in trouble, who somebody you know is in trouble, that we could pray for tonight, that God would use that. Now, friends, I think that works. I'll be honest with you, by Monday morning, preach it, I've forgotten the message. They forgot it by 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon. That's honest, isn't it? But I know now they're not going to forget it because they've got to go say, hey, here's what I think about that scripture. Here's what I see. Here's what I'm going to do in my life. It's absolutely life-changing. If you went to our church last Sunday, you'd see this. Number one, everybody would be invited to a small group that night. I have a sermon outline in the bulletin. On the back side of it is a listing of all 50 of our groups, addresses, phone numbers. You're told to look on the back side of that outline and choose a group. There are teen groups, there are college groups, singles groups, married with young children, married with children under 3, young married with no children. You can't even get pregnant in that group. I mean, there are older adult groups without children. You name it, there are your groups there. You pick that group. Our leaders are trained that Sunday morning is the time you invite people to groups. So we got 110 guys out every Sunday morning walking across our church looking for the pink visitor name tag, and they're going to invite them to groups. And when I call the visitor on Sunday afternoon, here's music to my ears, when they say, you know what, I was invited to five life groups this morning. Now, my friend, not only does that help your life groups grow, but that helps your church be more friendly. That takes care of the problem that nobody spoke to me Sunday morning because, man, these guys, man, they are intense about getting someone to their group. So that's what would happen if you came. Now, if you were a leader and you came, number one, you'd be inviting people. Number two, you could go by the welcome desk and pick up a packet of lessons, a discussion guide centered around the message. Now, you also would have got an email to you on Friday, so if you wanted to look at it earlier. But if you hadn't looked at it earlier, the lesson is so self-explanatory. I tell my leaders, if they'll spend 30 minutes on Sunday afternoon looking over that lesson and studying and praying over it, they'll be an extraordinary group leader. So you'd pick up a packet of lessons. If you came to our second service, you'd also be to pick up a packet of all the visitors from that morning. And you could call them that afternoon. It's an awesome deal. Now let me talk to you just a moment then about the strengths of this model. The pulpit-based groups make the Sunday sermon come alive in the members' lives. It's no longer just a lecture. By the end of the day, everyone must answer the question, what difference will this make in my life? How many preachers we got here? I'm telling you guys, as a preacher, it's my favorite thing. By the time I study all week for that message, Friday morning I sit down to write the discussion guide, that's easy. And man, it just thrills me to go, okay, what is the major application point of this message? Second thing, group leaders do not have the pressure of coming up with their own discussion guide. This saves the leader time and ensures consistency in the meetings. In other words, I'm not telling a guy, you've got to go out there and come up with your own questions every week. These questions are written with small group dynamics involved. They're sort of like the serendipity model. They're ready for them. All I want that leader to do is pray over those questions and get out and inviting people and loving on people in their group. They don't have to worry about the curriculum. I see a lot of groups bogged down in that. Next point. All groups follow a common study that brings unity to the church. Now, if you are worried about your church accepting small group ministry, I believe the pulpit-based model will help you. It helped us. To our older members, it made sense. Now, if we had 50 groups meeting this Sunday, and they were all doing whatever they wanted to do, we'd have some questions. What's going on in all these groups? But we can rest assuredly tell our folks we know more about what's going on in these groups than we do our Sunday school classes. Everybody's doing the same curriculum. And I'm telling you, it brings a sense of unity to the church. In fact, most churches begin their small group ministry by offering an alternative service at the church. We did the same thing. Our first year, we had maybe 30 people who'd go to that. By our second year, we had nobody who wanted to come to the building. We do not have an alternative service at the building now. We're a large church. Because these people have been convinced, not only is this a good idea, it's a biblical idea, we preach about it, and it's effective. And these groups aren't all just out there fruiting around. We know what they're doing. And I'm telling you, some of our older members are our most fired up groups. They believe in it. So I'm telling you, I think it helps on that. It answers the common objection, what's going on in these groups. We know more about what's going on then than anything else. And here's an important point to me. It avoids the traditional information overload from presenting four separate topics. Guys, in most of our churches, if you're faithful, you come to Sunday school, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. Sunday school, we introduce you to one topic. Come in Sunday morning service, let's give you topic number three. Come back on Sunday night, we'll talk about something completely different. We'd like you to learn topic number three. Topic number four comes on Wednesday night. Before you know it, you got four different topics. Have you ever thought there's something wrong with that? That is not a good way to learn the Bible. And it's an awful way to apply it. It's information overload. I'm throwing four different things at me. Am I going to have time to do something about it? Probably not. Because that's why we're not seeing life change in our churches. Well, here at Landmark, at least we know, we've got two of those things paired together. And now you come Sunday morning, you go Sunday night, and it all fits. And not only do you learn something and hear something, but you're going to do something about it. And what happens is people begin to change. I'm telling you, if you tried to drag our people away from small groups now, back to a traditional Sunday night service, you couldn't do it. In fact, about every other month we take a break and the attendance is pitiful. I'm telling you, once you experience it, you wouldn't want to do anything else. Next point here. Yearly leaders training and reorganization make room for growth and keep groups from growing stagnant. In our model, we take a break the middle of December to the end of January every year. Some churches take their break in the summer. In that break, we retrain leaders. We start a whole new, every group nominates some new leaders. We train those leaders. We reform the groups, and we start all over. Now, some groups stay fairly the same. Most groups are very different. We encourage all groups to shuffle. And so in this model, it makes a simple way to keep organized and keep things moving. So, in this model, we talk about how you train leaders, how you convince church leaders this is a good thing. What do you do with the children's one of the number one questions about small groups? We've got some good ideas about how you handle that. I guarantee you that will work. Let me show you something. We kept getting so many phone calls at our church about small group ministry. I'm not telling you we do it perfectly, but I think we do it well. You know, a lot of churches say, how do you do it? And we had churches visiting, we're talking, we just weren't doing a good job. So about a year and a half ago, we produced this video series. And let me just tell you a moment about it. It's actually got two videos and two reproducible workbooks, okay? Video number one is about becoming a small group church. And basically in that video, we talk to church leaders about why you do small groups, how you set it up, how do you answer the objections. You're going to have some objections. So in video one, you take your church leaders, your elders, your staff, your deacons, you would let them go through that and be convinced about it. What we tried to do is put everything in one packet you needed for small group ministry. I think we came pretty close. Second video is an 8-week training video for small group leaders. And we have a training manual that you would reproduce. You would take this video and you would use it on a Wednesday night. Some churches use it over a Friday and Saturday, Sunday weekend. And you would train your small group leaders. And in this, all the things we've talked about this morning are here and in much greater detail. I just wanted you to see that. If you're interested in that, or if you have some questions you'd like to ask me, I'll be at the Share Him Ministries booth. That's where we sell these packages and some other things, which is booth 632. It's a couple of aisles back up this way. And if you'd like to come talk about it, we'd love to talk about it. Yes? And there's some order forms down here if you want to take those. They're right down front. Now, again, we want to do that to help you. We also, I see Brad out here. They've taken our material. They've used it. You can talk to him. We got some testimony of other churches who've taken this package, and it's worked for them. I'm so excited about this, I can't tell you. I believe it's life-changing. I believe it would change your church. I don't care where your church is coming from. I believe if you'll hold them to the fire biblically and effectively, that they will. I mean, I can't tell you the skepticism in our church when we started. And I can't tell you how much they love it now. In fact, I'll never forget the week where it really hit me how successful this was. On Saturday, I went to the church building, our fellowship hall, and I performed a wedding ceremony for Dennis Chapel. When I first met Dennis and Cindy, Dennis was in trouble with the law. They started visiting our church. Before long, Dennis was in prison, but they were in a small group. Every time their small group would meet, at the end of it, the wives would stay back at the house and pray for Dennis because Cindy was there, and the men would go to jail and visit Dennis. Well, Dennis got out of jail. And that Saturday morning, we gathered to remarry Dennis and Cindy because they'd gotten divorced through the middle of this mess. When I walk into fellowship hall, there's all the chairs, and there's one group of chairs roped off. I said to Dennis, why are these chairs roped off? He said, those are for my life group. Because they are the reason we're back together. Well, Tuesday that week, I went to do a funeral for one of our older members who'd passed away with cancer. His name was Russell Prosser. When it came time for the funeral, I saw the pallbearers come in, and I quickly noticed who they were. They were the men in Russell Prosser's life group. And that week it hit me from someone as young as Dennis and Cindy Chapel to old folks like Russell and Mary Prosser, that this concept works. My friends, it works like it worked in the first century. The church exploded because they effectively met in the temple courts and from house to house. There is something dynamic about that. And I pray that you'll be able to discover that in your life too. I think it's one of the most exciting things going on in our churches. Let's pray together and you'll be dismissed. Oh, Lord, thank you so much for us being able to come together this morning. Lord, I thank you for the great interest, obviously, in small group ministry. Lord, thank you for the biblical model that we see. And thank you, Father, for even bringing us to a culture where we are upset about how families have broken up, how neighborhoods have broken up. Some of us don't understand this because we're so connected in our churches that people in America are rather lonely. And God, we could get mad at that and we could throw stones at our culture. Or Father, today we choose to accept this challenge and to become the place in our communities where people build meaningful, lasting relationships. Where people build friendships with a purpose to help them become more and more like Jesus Christ. Father, I pray for all of us in our churches that you'll give us wisdom. You'll help us to know, Lord, how to do this ministry and to do it well. Father, for churches that have in the past failed, I pray, Lord, that there'll be a second chance. For those churches who have never tried this, Lord, I pray that they would look closely at what small group ministry could mean. Father, I thank you for the way it's changed my life and changed so many that I know. We give you all the glory and honor. We thank you so much for Jesus, who modeled small group ministry with the 12 like no one else. And we pray this in his name. Amen.